This is the Misdirected Mark Podcast, a podcast about gaming, game mastering, and entertaining you, our listeners. We are explicit, you have been warned, and I'd like to thank Mike Willer for letting us use his music on our show. Now let's pick up those mics and get on with this thing.
I'm not seeing any video on the Twitch.
You will.
Okay.
Because Genius forgot to hit the go live button before... Normally we go mic shot before we get to that point, and that's what I forgot to do. But well, there it is.
Wow, it is bigger than I expected.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's why I needed both of you.
I'm not sure I'm up to this, guys.
Well, if we work together, I think we can finish this.
All right, come on, all together now. Grab your napkins, break off a piece, and let's start eating.
I just want to know where you got a 48-inch pretzel.
I want to know how he cooked a 48-inch pretzel.
I have powers you guys have never seen. Cooking powers.
And with that, welcome to the 422nd episode of the Misdirected Mark Podcast. Tonight, we return to our examination of Everseries by tackling the Juggernaut. Along the way, we'll take comments, examples, and suggestions from the chat room for life before jumping into the after show. But first, my name is Jerry.
My name is Phil.
And I am Old Man Logan.
I assume the Juggernaut was our 48-inch pretzel.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, listen, I would be down for sharing a 48-inch pretzel. I'd be down for sharing a fucking Hershey Kiss if we could all get back together.
Like, that's true. That's true.
Someday.
Someday in the summer is what it's looking like.
All right. Let's check our temperatures before we head into the house. Phil, how you feeling?
Fucking great. And I mean that as sarcastically as possible. No, I mean, I'm fine. Physically, I'm fine. My arms bother me because I had to go do the snowblower. And one, it's just hauling the snowblower around, so that's just a little extra work on my arm. But two, the vibrations from the engine just wind up going right through the bone in my arm. For those of you who have not been here long enough, 2 years ago, I broke my arm pretty spectacularly. And anyway, it still bothers me today. Anyway, if that's nothing compared to my rotten mood, which I'm hoping will turn around in a little bit after I've eaten some chocolate, drink some caffeine and chat with you guys for a bit. But no, I'm getting crushed at work. I've got a large number of unreasonable projects that are stacking up on top of each other. No support from upper management about getting them done other than no, you should do them and faster. I had like no breaks today. I have like basically no breaks tomorrow in my schedule and probably will never get a break again until like the summer. So I'm pretty lousy, actually, kind of annoyed. So at least I'm healthy-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Trump isn't president.
I mean,
yeah,
for now. Anyway,
hopefully this show will help lift your mood a little.
That's right.
Anyway, that's enough about me. Jerry, how about you?
Pretty good. It was we're only on Tuesday. It still feels like Monday, but it was a busy week, and I'm doing pretty well. Health wise, I'm pretty good though. Got to start losing some of the pounds, and I'm other than that, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm fairly upbeat. Despite our Bills loss, I had a good weekend, so it's pretty good. How about you, Bob?
Physically, I haven't worked the last 2 days because I've been waking up in the morning with a knot in the back of my skull that is pounding my head to no avail with no end. And I've been trying to mellow everything out, relax the muscles and stuff. I can get so far some brief relief for a couple of hours, but I haven't gotten it to go away completely yet. So I've been working on that for the last 2 days now. I had a nice long stretch today, so hopefully that means everything's mellowing out. There's a little bit of a twinge here right now, but other than that, I had to take a day to recover from the weekend with the football loss, because I dared let myself hope, which was a dumb thing to do, being a Buffalo Bills fan. I should have tempered that a little bit.
I'd never give up hope.
I know, but and other than that, I'm still healthy and getting by. So all right, good enough to enter the building. Let's hit the lobby. It's time for one thing. Mm-hmm. And for me, that one thing is my rewatch of Avatar: The Last Airbender just wrapped up. I watched the two-part mega episode finale of the series today, and I had never seen it before, so I never knew how it ended up. And I was overall very, very pleased with the way this show went down. The lessons that they put in it, and the examples of inclusivity and you know, all of the good stuff that kids should learn. There's all kinds of good stuff in that show. So if you haven't seen it, I recommend watching it. And if you've got kids, I recommend you show it to your kids. I think it's good. So that was me. Watch The Last Airbender. What about you, Jer?
I enjoyed WandaVision. Without giving up any spoilers, I'll just say that as with many, many, many streaming series, episode 3, they start to kick shit in the gear. And they do a good job of giving you just a little hint of where they're going and doing some more Easter eggs. And I wouldn't say they're answering some questions, but they're moving in the direction of answering questions. And of course, presenting a few more. But where the first two episodes were a little silly and just kind of weird for the sake of being weird, though, as part of the plot, there's definitely, like, this episode started giving us a piece of the overall plot of what's going on. And that's all I'll say. It was a lot of fun, and Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen are amazing actors, and seem to be having a good time with it.
And word came out today that episode 4 will start to peel back the curtain. So, and that's right around where usually that's where the hook is for a show. Episode 3 and 4, usually somewhere in that neighborhood, 3, 4, 5. So right on schedule.
I haven't seen it confirmed, but I saw a release today that Obi-Wan Kenobi is going to be 6 one-hour episodes.
Cool. That's cool.
I could go for that.
It's like one big 6-hour movie. I'm down with that.
Yep. All right, Phil, what's your one thing this week that gave you life?
I didn't even remember it until I saw it on the show notes here. My one big thing was the inauguration. I took off Wednesday afternoon to watch the inauguration, which was great. Watched it partially on pins and needles, like confident that the Secret Service, you know, knew what they were doing, but also at the same time, like, holy shit, just get them inside, you know, like, but I mean, it was really good. I mean, it's, you know, by this point, everybody in the US has, you know, seen most of the highlights of it, from Bernie on his chair to, the poet laureate's, amazing, absolutely amazing, poem. It was great. It was great all around. It was nice. It's nice to have adults in the White House. I watched, you know, I have over the last couple of days watched press briefings run by adults who can tell the truth. An unchained Dr. Fauci positively giddy up at the podium, being able to speak freely. What else? I mean, basically just like adults return to the White House. It was quite nice. Also, just, you know, tangential to that, the MyPillow guy lost his Twitter account. And Rudy Giuliani got slapped with a $1.3 billion defamation lawsuit, which I just think is delicious. And they said they're not done naming defendants. They're just like they're working up slowly. So.
Didn't they also throw out, I don't know the whole story, they threw out Trump's challenge to a lot of the lower court rulings he was challenging, and they threw out all of his challenges?
I think they rendered a lot of them moot or something. And then, then they turned around and also rendered like a bunch of shit he did while he was in the annulment clause or whatever. They rendered those moot as well, which kind of sucks because, that'll just send me down a worse pathway. That's that. I got to watch adults take over the White House.
Sounds good.
It was quite enjoyable. On to announcements. Our only one announcement, I think we're going to have a few Kickstarter announcements next week. There's a couple Kickstarters that are coming out that look kind of interesting, so we may put a couple up next week. But I'll just mention the DS9 Watch Club week 23. This is the last week before the finale. There is no reason you should join us at this point. I just simply have mentioned it for the past 22 weeks. I'll just mention it this week.
Unless you've already seen it and you just want to hang out with us.
Yeah. If you just want to come hang out, watch finale with us, you should just come join us. But we're into the final 8 episodes. As Jerry commented, he's like, boy, these are dark. It's not going to let up for a little while.
Yeah, I was telling Bob, this, we're at the point now where I've seen like every other episode, give or take. So it's fun to see the fill in the blank stuff is how things got to where they are now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, this, we're now rushing towards the end. I will say we will be in the next week or so ready to announce the Voyager Watch Club. I have my Voyager list done. What I need to do is spend a little time doing some research on the internet to see if my list includes all of the must-see episodes that critics have said. Mm-hmm. But also, I see that Evil John's in the chat room, so I'll just ask him here, and he can respond in the chat room. My Voyager game is not strong. This was my first complete watch-through. So I wouldn't mind having an extra set of eyes kind of check my work to make sure that my selections are sound and I didn't miss any important background ones. Although background's a little less crucial since this series, Voyager, is more episodic and not serial. Oh, good. John's going to ping me on the Slack. Good. But yeah, I have a definitive list. It is longer than our TNG Watch Club and shorter than our DS9 Watch Club.
Really?
I didn't dislike. I did the TNG Watch Club to get us to the DS9 Watch Club.
Yeah.
Voyager, I just went through and marked, like, I like these episodes.
Yeah.
Cool. Some of them are important, like, you need to see this to get this kind of thing. And then some of them are just like, this is a solid episode. This is a solid episode. This is an amazing episode.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So it winds up, by the nature of Voyager, when we get into it, it isn't as critical in terms of world building.
Yeah.
It's, you know, been my bet. It's been my big pet peeve about it. But anyway, I won't dwell on it too much longer, but we will have an announcement for the Voyager Watch Club. We will do it in the same format that we've done it before. It will not happen right away. I think I'm targeting March, early March to get started. We're going to take a couple weeks off and let people catch up on other series and things like that.
Fair enough.
Give everybody like a little breather, but we'll do watch parties again on Tuesday nights and all of that stuff. So cool. that'll all be in there. We'll do the forum and all that stuff.
Sounds good.
All right.
Cool. So we'll have more details for that coming out in the next week or two.
Excellent. Well, that brings us to our feature topic, which is of course a workshop. Are you ready, Phil?
I am indeed. Thank you. Workshop! It's the juggernauts! They're unstoppable! You can hit them, they keep going, they do damage, they run through stuff. How are you ever going to stop this threat? We're going to find out tonight when we talk about the juggernauts.
Don't suck. All right.
So, tonight we return with another entry into our adversary series. Tonight we're going to talk about juggernauts, those seemingly unstoppable villains. We're going to learn about who they are, what makes them tick, and how best to use them in your games.
Yes, and in order to do that, we have to go to step one, which is the definitions.
Behold, you are in the presence of Definition Panda.
All right, Phil, lay down some terms for our discussion.
Yeah. I'm gonna start defining in just a second. I did want to mention our wonderful boss, Rob. Keyed us in on this when we were setting up the show, that the word juggernaut has a bit of a history, and its terms come from colonial Britain. It has over time, the word has kind of diverged from its colonial past, but we wanted to just take a moment and acknowledge that that there's a bit of history to this word. And if you want to know more about it, we're going to put a link in the show notes that'll discuss the origin of the word juggernaut. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there so that we were, not ignorant to where the word came from. But now let's get started with the term juggernaut, which is defined as a huge, powerful, and overwhelming force or institution. And then from Wikipedia, we get another meaning. It is a literal or metaphorical force regarded as merciless, destructive, and unstoppable. And I think those both of those definitions are really good for what we want to kind of piece together in talking about RPG adversaries. So in terms of RPGs, the Juggernaut is a type of opposition that is large, powerful, uses overwhelming destructive force, and is seemingly, and I'm going to emphasize that word, seemingly unstoppable. And again, everything you'd expect, right, for the word juggernaut, big and unstoppable. But I really want to focus in on the second part, which is the adverb, seemingly, because in an RPG, the juggernaut really can't be unstoppable, right? Because like that would not make for a fun game. Just most people have to think it is unstoppable, right? And that's, and we're gonna get into that as we start talking about the juggernaut and using it in your game. You just have to think it's unstoppable. It, like most people have to think it's unstoppable, but then you find out it's not. That's gonna be key. Mm-hmm. The juggernaut is often a singular opponent, right? We think of it as like a thing. You don't often encounter them in a pack because that would be terrifying. One is usually enough in terms of what we're dealing with.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about a few types of juggernauts from media and games.
We're going to start with one that Andy mentioned in the chat room, which is the Marvel supervillain, the Juggernaut, who is big and literally is supposed to be the unstoppable force.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's the Tarrasque from Dungeons and Dragons.
There's the Death Star from Star Wars, plus Starkiller Base and every other Empire-based threat. Always big, brutal, tough to destroy, and just overwhelming.
All right. Then we have a Borg cube.
Yeah. The Borg are a hive mind. But the cube is really kind of a juggernaut.
And then, of course, we get the Terminators from the various Terminator movies. Unstoppable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We can consider Smaug from The Hobbit to be a juggernaut.
And if you want to stretch a little bit, Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers from the Friday the 13th and Halloween movies are both types of juggernauts as well. Dangerous, tough, and unstoppable.
Yeah, no, those are good. Those are good. Yeah. And I like that. That we had a nice range of genres to show that this is an adversary that you can have come up in any kind of
almost all of the slasher film villains end up being a juggernaut of sorts because they just keep coming. They just keep coming. All right. So now that we have some understanding of what juggernauts are, let's get into what makes them tick. Jerry?
All right, so let's talk about first the anatomy of a juggernaut. The juggernaut's going to be all about the ability to withstand damage and deal damage. These are the things that make up the juggernaut, both sides of this.
Right, let's start with they have amazing resilience and or amazing healing, which does at some point argue that Wolverine might also be a juggernaut of sorts. But one of the key features of the juggernaut is their ability to either not be hurt or to recover quickly from being hurt, or honestly, both of those things combined, which is also terrifying. This allows them to shake off most attacks, as well as attacks from multiple foes, right? Like everybody in the party can hit this thing. It's not going to matter that much. And mechanically in a game, we can do this by having like a really high armor class. We could have lots of hit points, regeneration, immunities, resistances, like all of those things. The key part of this resilience is that it is pretty broad, and it's not just one area. Like, you're not a juggernaut if you are, like, immune to fire, right? Like, unless your game is set in the fire elemental world where you're all fire elementals, then this guy's a juggernaut. But it's broad. Like, whatever you're throwing at this thing, it's shaking it off or taking it in stride. Yep.
So the next thing they're going to have is powerful attack or attacks. The juggernaut not only can take a punch, but they can really deal it out. Their attacks are going to be powerful on a scale where all their opponents are going to take notice. When the juggernaut attacks, they should wipe out minions in one shot, and often droves of minions in one shot. And whenever they attack, their attacks should always get the attention of the PCs, make them take notice, and probably make them a little concerned about the amount of damage that's being done and how it's being done.
Yes, I think I think you're absolutely right. I think that's like completely key. Like when a juggernaut hits a player character, the player character should be like, how much? Mm-hmm. Like shit, right? Like just that gravity that goes with it. Juggernauts have scale, right? They are large and imposing. You know, like I'll cite the Borg cube, right? Like the first time the Enterprise sees the Borg cube is enormous compared to the Enterprise. And the Enterprise is enormous when it comes to Starfleet ships.
Yep.
Right. The cube is like the cube dwarfs this thing. Like it's barely there. So it that's part of what makes it terrifying, right? Is this utter scale to it. And it's usually the first hint for players that this is going to be tough, right? Like the first time you see the Borg cube, it's scary. The first time you see the Tarrasque, it's terrifying, right? Like it's this scale that indicates like, well, we're in for a fight.
And think about the beginning of Star Wars where you see the size of the Star Destroyer compared to the blockade runner.
And then later on,
when you see the Death Star, realize that these Star Destroyers are parking in it.
Yes. You know? Yes, exactly.
It's just it's amazingly huge.
Hence the title of our episode tonight. That's no moon.
That is no moon. So as long as we're talking about the Death Star, we'll move on to that all juggernauts are going to have some sort of weakness. And it should be a weakness that is common enough or well-known enough that the players can make some use of it. It's got to be something. Could be obscure, could be hard to reach, could be hard to acquire. And when the juggernaut is attacked with a weakness, it's either going to bypass their defense entirely or negate the defense, making them more susceptible to the damage or making them more easy to stop. And so when you look at things like, obviously, the exhaust port on the Death Star
yep.
is a weakness. Juggernaut from Marvel Comics is susceptible to mental attacks.
Yep.
He cheats a little bit by wearing two helmets, but the same thing happens. These are all things that can be exploited and can be used to stop them.
Yeah, I mean, the Borg cube, the first Borg cube was stopped by a low-level regeneration command mm-hmm. that they got Locutus to execute, like, low in the, you know, in the list of commands that the Borg could issue.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, weakness. And I think you hit on it, right? All good juggernauts have a weakness. Bad yep. juggernauts are without a weakness, this thing is a game of attrition.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a game of skill. It's not a game of discovery. It's just who can put out more damage than, you know, first. You know, will the juggernaut wipe the party out or will the party put enough points on it to wipe it out?
That's right. I almost listed video game bosses from 80s and 90s stand-up games, but that's more what you're talking about, where it's really not about finding the weakness. It's just about how many quarters can you put into this thing so you finally take out enough damage to destroy it.
Yeah, now if the 80s or 90s video game boss had a weakness, like when it jumps, if you, you know, launch your fireball and hit the underside of it, then that's more of a juggernaut thing. But if it's literally just, I need to spam this attack key
yep.
yeah. enough times before it kills me,
uh-huh.
then that's still a juggernaut. It's just not a good one.
Yeah.
Cool. Next one is the juggernaut's going to have a motivation, right? I mean, let's be honest. We put this one into every one of our adversary segments, right? Without a motivation, what's the point of the exactly. villain, right? So like any good opposition, the juggernaut wants to do something. Sometimes it's simple, right? Like they may just want to cause mayhem and destruction. They may want to prove they're the best. They may just want quiet, right? Like sometimes they just want things to be quiet, be left alone. Uh-huh. Other times it can get complex, right? Like with the Borg, they're carrying, like, you know, like the Borg is a hive mind, right? But like the cube is a juggernaut and it's part of an ideology, right? Of like assimilating new cultures. Uh-huh. Like its job is to run down ships and take them over.
Yep. So next time, to their motivations is that most juggernauts are going to have some sort of objective. Not all the juggernauts have objectives, but some do. If they do, their objective will be something they can gain by force. And there's going to be nothing subtle about this. Their power and their vulnerability means they don't have to be clever or careful. And they are going to pursue things in straight lines. For example, think about the Tarrasque. If you've read the Book of the Tarrasque, or if you've ever had to face a Tarrasque, they tend to be pretty much single-minded, moving towards destruction, and so on. They basically destroy this city, eat everybody in it, and move on. And with a Trask, you're hoping it's not part of a mating ritual.
Right. So. This is not a finesse. This is not a finesse adversary where, like, the puppet master has, like, you know, its network of thralls, and, you know, the hive mind has, like, you know, its fleet of drones or whatever, and, you know, can do things, you know, with both stealth and force and stuff. Like, think about it. If you're this big, if you're this invulnerable, you're the hammer, right? Yep. And when, you know, all you have is a hammer,
yep,
every problem is a nail, right? And that's how the Juggernaut thinks, right? Like, got a problem, just going to walk literally through the wall to get it. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So,
sorry.
Now that we know what's under the hood, let's talk about why we like these opponents.
Yep. Yes.
And when it comes to the appeal of the Juggernaut, it is two words: raw power. Right, we love the Juggernaut because we find things that are powerful and unstoppable, both exciting and scary.
And so the idea of something that exists that is so resistant to damage and doesn't have to fear any harm is thrilling. Consider the original Terminator movie or the Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees I mentioned. People find them thrilling because they aren't afraid. Those creatures aren't afraid. They just walk through damage and they cause damage wherever they go. In the Terminator, when Reese unloads his whole shotgun into him at the club, and then a few seconds later, the Terminator gets back up again, we're stunned and terrified. This has changed the game from what Reese is up against, and makes it more interesting to all of us.
Yeah, absolutely, right. In many stories, we become comfortable with the powers that the main characters have, right? So, like, and in role-playing games, if you're playing as players, you are very comfortable in your own power, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so, you know, when you encounter something where your powers don't really seem to affect it, mm-hmm, like, you take notice.
Yeah.
And I'll reference, going back to the Borg cube, because I've been in that Star Trek state of mind, the Battle of Wolf 359 in Star Trek is one Borg cube, right? A single Borg cube against a fleet of Federation ships. And when the Enterprise finally gets there, when they arrive, there's just wreckage. Remember, they come out of warp and, like, it's just wreckage. 39 ships lost, 11,000 lives perished, right? Like, in that moment, like, we've seen the Enterprise do a lot of stuff up to that point, right? Yep. And now we just see, like, this cube has not only beat the Enterprise, but when the Enterprise gets there, there's just destruction.
Yep.
So, lastly, while we're going to have these things that scare us, we also want to see the Juggernaut defeated. So when this weakness is discovered and it's finally defeated, we should rejoice. And you think about the destruction of the Death Star and the New Hope. Mm-hmm. When it finally gets blown up, everybody's happy. There's a celebration.
Yep. Have a party.
Everybody gets in line. Have a party.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Good, Bob.
So the Juggernaut is definitely scary. Yep. But Jerry, how do we best use them in our games?
Well, obviously, the first thing is that Juggernauts are excellent as an opposition. They make a great solo adversary because the defenses and the attacks of a Juggernaut can easily hold their own with the entire group or team or party. Like other adversaries, they're going to be able to be used in stories and arcs and campaigns, and you can make them more than simple one-time encounter. They should have their own story arc, which is going to go something like this.
Yeah, I mean, your mileage will vary, and, you know, we obviously encourage you to mess around with this order, but this is a pretty typical story arc for the Juggernaut, right? So it starts with this. You encounter signs of the Juggernaut's carnage, right? So, like, in that Star Trek episode, right, they find, like, there's a city missing and there's just a big crater, mm-hmm, right? Clearly something bad has happened here. And they get signs, you know, sensors say it's probably the Borg. Mm-hmm. What's next?
Next, you're going to want to track the path of the Juggernaut. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to go out there and try to kind of piece back what happened, where it happened, and start looking for clues.
Then you're going to have your preliminary encounter with the Juggernaut. And that's when you're going to discover its resistance and its power. And you're going to get some clues or, you know, about it, or learn its purpose and or objective.
And after that fight, you're going to probably retreat and regroup and kind of figure out that a straight on attack isn't necessarily going to work.
Yep. And then you're going to be off to discover its weakness, purpose, and or objective, right? Because you got to... you got to, like, figure this thing out now. You know, in the case of, like, you know, the Borg cube, like, where is it going? Well, it looks like it's heading to sector 00, you know, what is it, 001. right? It's heading for Earth. If it's, you know, if it's Marvel's Juggernaut, right? Like, there's literally a path through the city. Like, where is he heading? That kind of thing.
And lastly, they're going to confront the Juggernaut in battle. And in that battle, finally exploit its weakness and hopefully stop it.
Yes. You know, in a role-playing game, we don't know if they're going to stop it, but we hope they are. Okay. So there's a few tricks to this arc. I want us just to tease out. We mentioned a little bit of them as I think we were talking, but we'll just tease it out a little further. Go ahead, Jer. Tell us about the initial encounter.
Okay. So in the initial encounter, you want to rough the characters up, but don't kill any of the main players or the characters. In some cases, the players will be smart and know when to retreat. If they don't, they may try to stick out the fight. And if that's the case, it's best to have the Juggernaut just brush past them and leave. Because one, it's going to end the fight and say you're going to do more damage. And two, it's going to be insulting as hell and will ensure that the more stubborn characters are going to want to pursue the rest of the arc. However, it should be of note that you can have this encounter occur more than once, but if you have it occur too many times, your player is going to be frustrated and disheartened by the Juggernaut, and some of them might just give up. And that's why you need to have every encounter be meaningful, and hopefully they're going to learn something from the encounter, or the Juggernaut gets away, but they save something or save someone, but they advance their own personal plots as part of this. You don't just want to use the Juggernaut to beat on the players over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to be fun. But I mean, I have, you know, like I've run into those things where, you know, you put it out there and you're like, the players should scatter like after a few turns and the players are like, I'm digging in. And it's like, oh, no, like, no, don't. You're like not even like you're not even remotely ready to fight this thing yet. And so that, you know, just have it leave is great. Mm-hmm. Like yep. It just leave. What are you going to do about it? Like, it just leaves. Mm-hmm. OK, So interesting. I don't know what I did with the coloring on this thing, right? So, something happened. We just lost a chunk of show notes.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Z. Hang on. All right, forget it. I can wing it.
Yep.
I don't know what happened to it. The next part of it that you want to talk about is discovering the weakness, right? So we got to, when it comes to discovering the weakness, you're going to probably have to get the group near the Juggernaut again, right? Like you might need to get some readings, some sensor sweeps. You might need to observe it, that kind of thing. Or you might not need to involve it again, right? You might need to find out someone who knows about the Juggernaut, like its creator or its lover, things like that. So that's like Rogue One, right? Rogue One was about, you know, the creator knowing the weakness to the Death Star. Right. And that whole adventure is basically just getting the weakness into the hands of, you know, into the hands of the good guys. So you can actually you can do a lot with this. If you are doing this in like a form of an arc, like bigger than a story, right? A couple stories, you can have a whole story dedicated to coming up with the weakness. Right. So you can just dedicate a whole adventure to finding out what the weakness is and going to get it. Meanwhile, the Juggernaut's like doing its thing, like it's out there doing whatever, but like the players have to like run off and find this mystical crystal or something that's going to be needed in order to, you know, to defeat some sort of dragon or something. Yep. But ultimately what you need to do is get the players through this part where in the end they know what the weakness is and they are properly prepared to exploit the weakness, because that then leads them up to the final battle.
Yep. All right. When we get to the final battle, this is going to be where the player's hard work takes off. You're going to want this encounter to be very tough, but once the weakness is exploited, there should be a shift in tone. In Star Wars: A New Hope, the first torpedo blast just shakes the Death Star and raises concerns, but doesn't end it. And then the Juggernaut should then react what has happened. Do not have it cover up or negate its weakness. When the players discover the weakness and exploit it, let them exploit it. Don't pull a Marvel Comics thing. Don't have the Juggernaut suddenly slap on two layers of mental defense when the players figure out he's vulnerable to mental attacks.
Right.
The Juggernaut instead should react to what happened. They're not used to being vulnerable. They should be confused, off balance. Maybe they should be a little concerned. Maybe for the first time, the players see it show fear.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where they're here to be defeated.
The Juggernaut is often full of hubris, right? Like when that first when that, what is it? I can't remember the exact timing, right? But somebody comes up to Vader and is like, I think we discovered some problem with the thermal, the thermal exhaust port. And he's like, nonsense, right? Nope, he's just like,
it's Grand Moff Tarkin.
Oh, it's thank you.
Evacuate now in our moment of triumph.
Right. Exactly.
It's overestimate their chances.
It is solid ass hubris, right? Yeah, just like, oh, there's a weakness. Rubbish. That's not a weakness. We'll finish him off, right? And they don't even think about it. And then, like, then they die, right? So, because the Juggernaut's not used to having to think about this, right? And you know, get into the psychology of this. The Juggernaut is enormous. It is highly damage resistant, and it is incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. It has not had to contemplate its mortality.
Yeah.
Right. So when somebody hits its weakness, it's literally like, no, I cannot believe this is happening. Not, oh shit, I need to double up my, you know, like, what if the thermal of like exhaust port like lowered down into the Death Star?
Yeah.
After the first torpedo, right? Like,
you hit just, it now, bitch.
Right. Like, oh shit, we left that thing open. And they just like lower it into like it was a sunroof, right? Like, oh shit. Like, then the movie would suck, right? So keep that in mind. The Juggernaut does not perceive this as the problem that it is. And so ultimately, it is not only a weakness to its invulnerability, it is a weakness that preys upon its hubris, which was not anything we put in the notes, but it's the kind of shit I think of while we're sitting here talking about it. Okay, lastly, I just want to talk about the Juggernaut as a member of a team. We've been talking about it as a solo adversary. It could be a part of a team. Obviously, on the team, it's the heavy, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be the tank for the team. If you have a team setting, I don't think you need to make it quite as powerful. I wouldn't make a Death Star powerful, right? If it's part of a team. It should be a considerable threat, though, still. It should always be a considerable threat.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the rest of the group should have a different array of abilities that make them somewhat softer. Taking out the team's Juggernaut is going to make taking out the rest of the team easier, and that's part of why they're there.
Yeah, like Black Tom doesn't stand a chance if the Juggernaut goes down.
No, not really.
Right, like, that's a, you know, in that relationship, one of them is doing more work than the other. Right. Yeah.
Definitely.
So we had a really good question from Andy in the chat room that segues into our next piece. Is Superman a hero Juggernaut? So they're a logical adversary, but can a Juggernaut be an ally?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Juggernaut can totally be an ally. Again, as an ally, their contribution is going to be physical force, right? Like, it's the thing they bring to the table. But because of that, they can easily overshadow characters.
Yeah.
So you got to use them in a way where they're not doing all the heavy plot lifting for the characters, right? You can't just be like, oh, we ran into something called Superman. But they make great backup, they make great cavalry, and they make great extraction forces, right? Have them show up late in the fight to mop things up. You know, like, you defeated all the main bad guys and all the minions are like, all of the minions bots are, or the minion bots are still running around. In comes Superman and like drops a city block on it or something, right? And it's just like, ah, good job, guys. I got the rest of this. That kind of thing, right? Like, it tidies up the plot, right? Like, without overshadowing. And if they're getting their asses kicked and they need an extraction, this is a great time for Superman to come, like, Kool-Aid Man style, like, through the wall. Yeah, oh no, and scoop him up and take him away.
And a good example of why this doesn't always work is Justice League, the movie.
I'm sorry. I've never seen that before.
So
Snyder Cut's not going to save anything.
Oh my God, the Snyder Cut.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know what? Screw him. I'm going to make my own cut too. If he can take forever making one, I can make one in 12 years. Anyway.
The important thing is that if you're going to have the Juggernaut as part of a team, there should be a reason why they can't be part of the team all the time. Otherwise, why wouldn't you have them with you all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Superman, you know, hey, Superman, why don't you just come with us on every adventure? And he's like, well, I got the rest of the world to fucking save. Like, you kids need to keep Gotham City clean. Like, I'll be around.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys watch this and you go talk to some fish. All right. All right. Actually, I like Aquaman. Go ahead.
Motherfucking Batman's going to get shot. What is it, Bob?
Motherfucking Batman's going to get shot in the motherfucking face.
That's it. If you've never seen that YouTube video, it's hilarious.
All
right.
All right. So that was our look at Juggernauts.
Yep. We're going to head off to chat room, see what they're up to. And it's a lively bunch tonight. There are a whole bunch of people in there that I haven't seen in a while. I'm kind of excited
to
check in with them. But first, Bob, do the thing that you have to do so that you don't get a demerit from the bosses, which is talk about another show on the Misdirected Mark Network.
Much as we would love to just focus on the Misdirected Mark podcast and screw everybody else because this is our show and
we're a family.
It's a family. We are not the best. We are not the brightest. We are all a family. And part of that family is the lounge. And in the lounge, Doc finds the best, the brightest, and the most fun game designers and sits down to have a cool chat with them. You never know what conversation is going to come up in the lounge. Yes. All right.
All right.
So
we got some fun people in the chat room.
As stated, Evil John's in the house and he is having a ball. In fact, Evil John brought up the crystalline entity in Star Trek.
Yes.
It was a juggernaut until the players found its weakness. And then, and this is where it gets really fun, you end up with the moral question of whether or not to use that information.
So, that's like Hugh and the Borg. I mean, the Borg is, again, technically the hive mind because in that case. But also, when you discover a weakness, is the weakness morally questionable? I mean, I think that's probably one of the best. I think that's why the episode with Hugh is one of the best episodes in TNG, is the ethics around what they want to do.
Yeah.
Originally, their original plan of what they're going to do with Hugh.
Yeah. The Queen mentioned that Captain Marvel is a juggernaut, that's an ally.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But they keep having a runoff to save the rest of the universe, while you know those second rate heroes, the Avengers, have to take care of saving Earth.
They do it in a really good way, though, because they're like, why don't you just do whatever? And she's like, the rest of the universe has the same problem. Like, there's a whole bunch more people. Like, they do it in a way that reminds you, like, it's very Earth centric of you to think that you're like the only thing she needs to do.
And honestly, take care of these guys. The Infinity Saga was clearly, here's a bunch of Earthbound heroes and they're out of their element to a certain degree when they're out there in space. I mean, the Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, did their best to help out and whatnot, but you really ultimately have the MCU starting out as an Earthbound thing. And now going forward, you're going to see more and more space-based stuff happening with more space-based characters. And it's going to kind of balance that out so that there's more people helping where help is needed in the greater universe. So that's
I mean, in the comic books, there's like a whole thing about that, right? Like there's there's Nova and all of that.
to answer Bob's question, Vermithrax Pejorative is the dragon and dragon slayer that can only be destroyed a very particular way in the movie.
Jeez, man. I don't even remember
he actually had a name.
I was like too young to remember it had a name.
Oh, it gets mentioned many times.
And I mean, I just meant like I was like 10 or something. What year did that movie come out?
80 or 81. So yeah, we were both about
10. Yeah, so I was, it was before I was like 9. I was like 8 or 9 when it came out.
It's another one. And that's a movie that when it came out as a kid, I didn't appreciate it. I thought it was a little slow. But when I got to my teens and saw the storytelling, it was a lot more fun. But again, an example of basically an unstoppable force.
Yeah.
That they have to discover what the weakness is. And then once they discover what the weakness is, it's a pretty big it's a pretty big sacrifice they have to give up to stop them.
So.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out. There are a few more people. The Gator, Gator has made an appearance. Gaming and BS is here, which is exciting because I'm gonna go hang out on their Twitch stream Saturday morning and talk about Forbidden Lands.
Yeah,
which is really funny because next week that's what we're doing here on the show is we're going to talk about Forbidden Lands. I've been fielding requests on Twitter that if we would do a deep dive into the system. So we're going to do some of that too here on the show. Saturday we'll be kicking off Forbidden Lands week. Jerry's going to interview Bob and I. That's how this is. How I'm going to set up the episode.
Jerry's a classic network crossover. It's going to be like Hawaii 5-0 and Magnum PI, where Gaming and BS and
absolutely
and Misdirected Mark are crossing over. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. That's good stuff. And we haven't done a crossover in forever, so that'll awesome. Be good.
Awesome sauce. Yeah.
If you want an example of a low-level juggernaut, in Brett's book, The Sheets of Avalon, one of the adventurers is the Iron Shoes. Mm-hmm. And the villain in that one is basically a juggernaut that pretty much follows a theme. You see devastation initially, and then you follow the clues. You finally meet the bad guy. And even as first-level characters, you can defeat him if you learn the weakness.
Yep.
And then exploit it.
Yep.
Yeah, the red cap is definitely a little mini juggernaut.
Yeah. So
Juggy Jr.
Yep. So it gives you what you need.
Simon and Simon on Murder, She Wrote.
I don't remember if that actually happened or not, but
God, it would be good.
I'm in. That's who could have crossed over on Riptide? That's what I want to know. Like, who could have
any of them.
I feel like in the Riptide era, it would have had to.
Well, no, because they were on NBC, so you had to only NBC properties could cross over onto
Scarecrow, Mrs. King.
Nope, that was a CBS.
Okay.
Hardcastle McCormick was ABC.
Automan?
ABC. That was Automan was ABC. Mammal
and Riptide would have been a bad combo.
Riptide and Knight Rider could have.
Yeah.
That would have worked.
Yep. A-Team was NBC. That is correct. A-Team was NBC. A-Team didn't need anyone. They didn't need anyone on there. They were enough.
Yeah.
I love the A-Team.
And that movie still deserves a sequel. Do you hear me out there, Hollywood? Damn you. Yes.
Seriously. Oh, you know what I need to do to prep for this gaming and BS thing? I should probably watch an episode or two of that Spycraft show on Netflix.
That's probably a good idea.
I'll make sure I knock off one or two of those episodes before I get on. That'll be important.
All right. Well, that should segue us back into the main topic area, where we will now continue discussing juggernauts with our round table, which starts with this question.
Mm-hmm. Yo, that's me. Who's your favorite juggernaut you've run into when you've played or that you have run as a GM?
I would say that I ran a three Dungeons and Dragons 3L35 campaign called the Mangelands, and as the backdrop for it, I used the Lost Kingdoms campaign box from Al-Qadim and stretched into a bunch of other things. And in that, the final big boss is Empress Kanya, who is a 3,000-year-old dual-class level 20 wizard, level 20 cleric, who's also a living lich. And it got interesting because the original campaign is the heroes find the seal that is slowly decaying, and if they can get to her tomb and break the seal, then they can go in and fight her while she's still weak. Unfortunately, they got TPK'd and disintegrated, and the seal was destroyed. And so we just picked it up again with the next group of players starting once again at level one, except now she's out and she's tough. And they gathered psychics and allies and everything. They had to go along and do a bunch of things, including kind of locate the people that bound her up 3,000 years ago, talk to their spirits, find a bunch of artifacts. And when they made it to level, I think, 17 or 18, they finally fought her. But she was the kind of villain with a ridiculous, she had 40 levels of hit dice. She had magic items and artifacts. Every attack she made involved handfuls of dice that would make a Shadowrun player green with envy. It was a lot of fun. And they beat her. And then we did they beat her, and that was pretty much the end of the campaign. We did one more week of wrap up where we have to kind of tell the story of what happened. But it was a good epic thing, and they built themselves up. They were waiting to fight her. They knew she was coming, and when they finally had to face her, it was basically an entire game that was just one long battle for one whole 5-hour session. So
nice.
That was Empress Kanya.
I can echo this. Bob and I think are going to share the same one.
Yeah. Other than what Phil's about to say, I racked my brain and I cannot think of a friggin' juggernaut that I've run into. Like, I'm drawing a huge blank. My memory's not what it used to be, you know, old.
So. No, it's fine, because you were not only a player in this game, but you dealt the killing blow to it.
Yeah, baby.
The Demon King in my Elhal campaign was absolutely a juggernaut. That was a Iron Heroes game, so that is D20, but low to no magic.
Yeah.
And everything was martial. Yep. Like, this is the game that had like 10 different cleave feats, like literally called cleave 1 through 10.
Yep.
That got progressively more and more terrible as you went up the chain. I'm going to let Bob talk about what it was like to fight it. I will talk about how I created it, because there were no stats for it.
Yeah.
There were never stats for it during the campaign, right? The Demon King was always this character that was like way off in the distance. And then it, like, by the time they rounded, like, I think it was level 17, right? Something like that.
Yep.
They were ready to, like, now actually fight the Demon King. And I think a week or two before the fight, I was like, well, now I got to make stats for this thing.
That's about right. It was about a week or two.
So what I did was I actually I wanted it to be a good solid fight. Like, I wanted it to last a while. I wanted to, in true Juggernaut style, I wanted to hit the players in a way they would take notice, because by level 17, fighting one opponent, like, these guys could murder like armies of people by themselves. I needed to make an opponent that could literally stand toe to toe with them. So I actually took my copies of their character sheets and like laid them out and constructed the kind of bad guy that would give them the biggest run for their money. So like, knowing that like Bob was an archer, it had charge and trample. So like, it would, so like, you know, Bob couldn't just stay away from it and pluck it with arrows. Like, it would just run up and bash into him, stomp on him and run by, kind of thing.
Yeah. It had trample too.
Yeah, it did. It had trample because, it on more than one occasion. Oh, it had, and it also had, that because, Jay's character had dual weapon fighting, and by level 17 was something like 7 or 8 attacks. Like, so it also couldn't remain in one spot. It was so logistically, like, it was a hard combat to create an adversary for.
Yep.
It needed an absurd amount of hit points, which I came up with these obelisks that were full of energy that it was using to cast this spell, which if it was successful, it would tear open the ground and release these titans and destroy the world. But once attacked, it could draw on those for hit points.
Yep.
So the players also had to get wise to get rid of those obelisks to stop it from loading up on hit points, because it was just, you know, continuously regenerating for a little while. It remarkably comes out like the dragon fight in Minecraft, that you had to go get rid of those, the crystals before you can really pound on this thing. But I built it, like, I custom built it to give the players a run for their money. So like, I knew it had to have an armor class of this much in order for, you know, in order, because I think while Jay also had seven attacks, you had multiple arrows, and I needed to put the armor class in a place where, what was it? The, I forget what it, like 40% of your arrows were probably going to hit, and the rest you would have to roll really well for.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise these numbers were going to be astronomical.
Yeah, it was, and it took a week. A ridiculous character to fight. Yeah.
And like, it took a week to build that thing up. So then I set you guys loose on it.
Yeah. I mean, it's classic Juggernaut. It was very hard to hit. When you did hit it, it could take a shit ton of damage. It had a way of regaining hit points to keep that damage, that damage threshold up. It could roll over you like a tank, literally. And it, like, everything about it was classic Juggernaut, and it played out exactly that way for the first X number of rounds, until that glorious moment in the climax when the tank trample move failed.
It had like this ridiculous bonus to strength. Yep. It wasn't a complete lock, but it was a ridiculous bonus to strength. And it charged Bob, and I rolled, and I rolled in the open. This was not a, I don't think I was rolling anything behind screens. I rolled a 2.
Yeah. And my character, of course, I had average strength. I was, because it was Iron Heroes, there was all kinds of tweaks to the martial systems. And I was a bowman, but I was using intelligence to hit.
Yeah.
So I was smart. I didn't have a lot of strength, and I had a decent dexterity, but I didn't have a lot of strength. And so I had to withstand this trample attack. And even though he rolled a 2, he still had a pretty good number. And I think I rolled a nat 20 on that one.
Yeah, and you were also in brain, bigot. You were also enlarged.
Yes, I had been embiggened by the spellcast. We shoehorned a spell system into it.
Yes.
But I honestly looked at it, even then, I looked at it as a deus ex machina, that the All-Father was looking down on me and going, oh no, you're going to stand firm for this one. And I just put my heels in the dirt, and the Juggernaut hit me and bounced off and lay prone. And it's like, oh, well.
And at that moment, when it fell prone, I was like, oh.
This fight's over.
They had already destroyed the obelisks. When it fell prone, I was like, oh, this is it. I don't have to do anything about how this fight's going to end.
Yeah.
It's going to end right here, because yep. Now that it's prone and it loses a whole bunch of its other armor class ratings, I was like, this is going to be bad.
Yeah.
And everybody took a hit on it, and Bob was at the end of the initiative order, and you unloaded.
I almost didn't get there because the multi-attack character tried to kill Steel.
Yeah, he just couldn't multi-attack. He had to move.
Yeah.
In order to get in, so he could only get one attack in.
Yeah. He was like foaming at the mouth, like, ah, here we go. And I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. Don't let him do it. Don't let him do it.
Bob unloaded.
Like, I want it.
The first arrow missed. And then the rest of them went. And it was so much damage that we actually took a break in the game while Bob added up all the dice.
That's like funny. We've told the story so many times on this show, people are probably tired of it, but it doesn't get old to me because it was so much fun.
It was so good. And then we did like the whole dramatic ending as it died. But it was a good it was very purposeful, right? I mean, like sometimes you just pull a stat block and you run over your characters with it. This was very much a different case where I was like, I need this adversary to do a thing in the game. And I will make it stats such that it will get there.
Yep.
An ordinary stat block probably would have been super anticlimactic.
You guys would have plowed through. I don't know what stat block I could have put in there that would have given you guys a run for your money at that point, short of a Tarrasque. Like if I had put a sword in a Tarrasque's mouth or something and chased you down.
Stat block of a Tarrasque, but in humanoid form.
Exactly. Yeah. All right.
I think we beat that one up. So,
all right. So next one is, what's the biggest challenge you have in running a Juggernaut or going up against a Juggernaut?
Yeah. So as a player, I feel like the biggest challenge would be realizing that you may not be able to take them down in that first encounter. You run into this thing and, you know, like literal Juggernaut is running through the X-Mansion, tearing through walls, knocking X-Men over and stuff. And it's like, you know, you try hitting them and nothing happens and nothing phases them. It's like, and you could get into that panic mode where you're like throwing everything you've got and end up just failing and not wanting to give up the fight. And it's like, there's got to be that point where you're like, oh, this is a special thing. We got to go. We got to figure this out before we can take this thing down. So, you know, it's like a balancing act of not wanting the bad guy to get, it's kind of like when the mastermind tries to get away. And you're like the big bad evil guy, you know, and you're like, oh, he got away again. And you're like, you don't want to let him get away, but
that's why you can't overuse him in that.
That
way.
Too.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. What about you, Phil?
For me, it's the opposite problem. And this crops up a lot more in older versions of Savage Worlds and in some other games. But it's when you have the initial counter and the players do way too much damage to it. Mm-hmm. Like, You needed to do a thing, but I recognize now that newer versions of Savage Worlds have capped this problem, but you get somebody who gets like a ridiculous run of damage dice, and suddenly you're now looking at, you know, you're now looking to soak, you know, 47 points of damage with your like D12, and you're like, well, like now I'm just going to have to hand wave all this shit, which is ridiculous because everybody knows you just knocked off 47 points of damage. They're expecting something dramatic.
Absolutely.
So yeah, there is definitely a balance in that opening, fight, because players get super creative, right? Like they get super creative. And if you have not foreseen what they can come up with, you might be like, oh yeah, this thing's going to roll right through them in this initial encounter. And they're like, you know what? Let's do it. We've been talking about this offline. You know, us two are going to team up with, you know, this one, and we're going to put our powers together and do this thing. And you're like, oh shit. like
that's it.
So yeah, that first encounter needs to be terrifying. And you don't want players to just think like, well, we just plunk this thing if we work hard enough.
Yep.
How about you, Jer?
As a GM, the biggest thing is really for me not killing the PCs in the first encounter. It is so easy to overpower a Juggernaut early on. I've told the story before about the first time I ran a Beholder in D&D 3.0, and I hadn't run a Beholder since first edition. And yeah, it was supposed to be a recurring villain, and it's a recurring villain because it TPK'd the entire party in like three rounds.
Someone forgot to reread the stat block.
Yeah, well, I also forgot that only one of my players had a missile weapon. He started by turning the wizard to stone and then using telekinesis to beat the other players with the wizard.
So, I mean, that's how I would do it. I mean,
yeah.
Salt in the wound, you know.
Yeah, and once the barbarian with the bow was out, nobody else had a recent decent missile. It just hung up on the ceiling and killed everybody.
A barbarian with a bow.
We had some
as a time-honored barbarian of many, many different versions. I'm gonna take some umbrage with barbarian with a bow, barbarian with a great sword or an axe or a chunk of tree or something. Like
she fought with a bow and with two short swords. That was her thing.
I'm not saying I'm not saying you can't.
No, it sounds more like a ranger.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like a ranger. It's a barbarian with a bow. And their pet wolf. And wouldn't it be easier just to play a ranger?
I look barbaric.
Yes. But as a PC, the big thing is when your best attacks do nothing.
Yeah.
When you're playing and you do encounter that Juggernaut, especially if it's a recurring villain, when the villain shows up. I mean, I've been in games where we're just like, where the villain shows up, we're just like, we're just going to walk away now. We can't stop him. There's nothing we can do. We're just going to leave. And that's discouraging for the players. It's also discouraging for the GM because they're like, oh, I had this big scene.
Yeah.
And the players see that this character, they're like, we can't do anything. We're just going to leave.
Yeah.
No, don't give up.
There's no point in us fighting it and wasting all of these resources. Right. When we can, you know, when the net sum is going to be, it gets away anyway.
Yeah.
So we're just going to save our resources and leave. you know, and I've been in those situations and it's discouraging.
I'll tell you who's got my favorite in media, who's got my favorite solution for the Juggernaut is Voltron. Like, they'll be fighting like some robe beast and they're getting their asses handed to them, right? And they're like, man, what do we do? What do we do? And then it's like, wait, this thing just opened up on my console. And it's like, oh,
like, quick solution found.
Yeah.
Yep. Put my Bayar in it, turn it, and all of a sudden, like a whole new weapon appears and then like disintegrates it. And it's like, there we go. Somebody earned enough plot points to finish off the beast.
Everybody spends a Benny. So
yes, everybody spend a Benny. Unlock the thing.
I still want to run my D&D Lion Voltron versus Tarrasque campaign.
I mean, that would kick some ass.
I am down for that 100%.
I would dig that, especially if you're talking about like Netflix Voltron. Netflix Voltron. That's anyway, and I was about to just veer off into Voltron land.
No, so we shouldn't do that. You know what time it is? It's time for our favorite question 3, and that is, what is your secret sauce for running a Juggernaut?
For me it is coming up with something interesting for the weakness. Like, and when I mean interesting, like if it's like a magic crystal and it's like some sort of, you know, I don't know, like dragon, like they're like, I got to come up with a whole story. Like there's got to be like a whole story. Like that is like the crystal heart of, you know, its lover or something, and the only thing that could wound it. Like it's got to have some shit to it. It can't just be like, oh, you got to go find this crystal. Like I got to have a whole story into why, and it's got to make logical sense, right? Yeah. Like it, you know, it can't just be like, well, if you attack it with ice, you'll totally defeat it. Like that's no good unless boring. I have a whole backstory about why that's true.
Make it a good moral dilemma, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a good moral dilemma, like, you know, yes, there's a weakness, but you're going to have to, like, you know, do some really bad stuff to get it, right? Like, are you willing to do that?
Yep.
Only an arrow that's been tipped in the tears of 100 children can defeat this thing. You don't have to kill the children, you just have to make 100 children cry enough to get enough water, that's all. But yeah.
Behold, these teddy bears I've brought to your village. Cry, you little bastards. Cry all over these arrows.
Ouch.
Yes. I mean, so I like that's my secret sauce. My secret sauce is if you encounter a juggernaut, I promise you the story of its weakness will be worth the discovery of its weakness.
Yeah.
Yes.
How about you, Jer?
My thing is making sure that there's something for everybody to do against the juggernaut, especially if you're playing with a group of players who are not optimized for combat. If you have characters that can't dish out or receive a lot of damage, they might need something else to do in combat. I've run a few games where they go up against a juggernaut, and on round one, the sage and the instructor and the rogue all go down, because on the first round of combat, they've all got pathetic hit points and dodges and so on, and the first attack just happens to take them all out. Or they simply can't do enough damage. You know, you've got the player who built their character all around, you know, they're the bard that actually only does bard stuff. It doesn't have blasting attacks and doesn't have any buffs left. And so now all they're doing is running around doing 1d4 damage to the creature with invulnerability 80, you know. So trying to come up with ways that they can be useful, things they can discover in the room, things that they can play off of. You have a really agile character who likes to jump off of things, put stuff in the room for them to jump off of, that sort of thing, is making sure that whatever happens when that juggernaut comes out, it's going to be more than just a damage soaker, and that different players can do different things, especially if they like working together. So that's for me. So that was our coverage of the juggernaut.
Yeah, we hope the next time you have one of these things come busting into your game, this advice will have been some help.
Now we're going to check in with the chat room one more time, and then it's off to the conversation corner. So Andy just brought up something, and we kind of touched on it already. Are non-humanoid juggernauts different, like the Trask or King Kong or Godzilla? And we've already mentioned the Trask. So essentially, no, they're it's all the same kind of concept. Just usually the scale is a lot bigger, especially with those three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because there we're talking kaiju. I mean, that's
Yeah.
You got.
Yeah, I don't think if it's. I think in some ways, the thing you can do with non-human is that the objectives of it could be more alien. Like, yeah. like the Borg is like a really interesting. Again, hive mind, technically not a. The cube is the juggernaut, but the idea that like they're here to absorb you into their, you know, into their collective, not asking if you want to join. Like the Federation runs around going like, would you like to join our club? You know, like, yeah. Would you like to be part of our clubhouse? And the Borg's more like, you're joining our clubhouse, right? Like, yeah. So yeah, like, I mean, and a kaiju is another good one. Like, who the hell knows what Godzilla wants when it rolls up onto shore?
Yeah.
Right? Like, and now you've got like, because now you've got two problems. One, you need to figure out how to defeat this thing. Two, you don't even understand what it's there for.
Yeah.
Right? And that's where you can get into the things like, it's here because actually a chemical company was dumping in its, you know, in it, you know, on its island.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And now it's like, well, now we're back to the moral dilemma. Like, is Godzilla really bad for attacking the mainland when, you know, some shitty chemical company dumped chemicals all over its island?
Yeah. And this is where you can have fun with the motivations for these yeah. more alien creatures. So you've got Godzilla, for example, and it's like, oh, you know what? In looking at the last three cities he's attacked, he's gone right to the nuclear power plant. He's drained all the energy out of it. He's feeding. Ding, yep. ding, 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 ding. Now you've got a clue. Or the Trask is gobbling up all kinds of earth and stuff, and he's growing bigger everything he eats.
Yeah.
Like, ah, like, okay, so there's kind of a motivation. I'm going to get big enough to break the world. Loads of fun.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, I think that's kind of the appeal to the non-human juggernaut is to assign it like kind of alien, an alien objective.
Yeah.
And motivation.
All right, we have an awesome moment here because we have a new person in the chat room. Mm-hmm. My Little Geekery. Welcome to the show.
Awesome name. Awesome
Welcome
name.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the party.
Welcome.
Yeah. And they said they used kaiju in a Doctor Who game, and their players didn't quite understand that direct attack wasn't going to do anything. They had to be smart about it, and they had to keep pushing them to think about what was happening and figure out what to do with all the hints and details. That's awesome.
Yeah. And Gaming and BS, which I'm assuming that is Sean, not Brett, is mentioning V'ger from Star Trek, the motion picture. Yes. Which is also a great juggernaut that's completely misunderstood.
Yeah.
And while that movie is slow and plodding in places, it is still, I love the ending. I don't want to give it away for anyone who's never seen it. I also wouldn't actually rush to tell anyone to go watch it. But if you are a serious fan of Star Trek, it is a very true Star Trek episode in that regard. Like when you get to the end and you find out what's happening, you're like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Surprise.
You got to cover a lot of ground to get there.
Yeah. I was going to say V'ger's special ability is that it's really, really boring for a long time.
Really, the true failing of that film was not a failing in and of itself, because Star Trek the Motion Picture was the first Star Trek anybody had since the 60s.
Yep.
Okay. You had been seeing it, like you could have, like, the week before turned channel and like, oh, look, Star Trek. But it was from the 60s. So what they did was, here's our establishing shots of the new version of the Enterprise while it's in space dock. Like 15 fucking minutes of them slowly panning across them. Yes. And it's like, oh my God, it's so dull, but it's also like amazing because you've got this huge establishing shot of this new ship that looks amazing. Well,
and it was also the first time they had a movie special effects budget.
Yeah.
As opposed to the TV special effects budget. So it's not only like, oh my God, look at this shot. It's like, oh my God, look at this model.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And Evil John's calling me out.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. Evil John's calling me out for not mentioning the animated series. And I will say this to Evil John about the animated series. I didn't know the animated series existed until like a certain point after it was long gone.
I agree.
It never came up on my radar. The series
like went under the radar.
It aired wherever it aired, and then it disappeared, and it got no syndication. Whereas the original series was on everywhere all the time.
Yeah. I'll give you that, but the animated series was on here in Buffalo. I watched it like in the early 80s at my grandmother's house. That was well after it was off the air.
Yeah, I don't remember ever hearing about it till a certain point.
It was on UHF. So
I remember seeing it in passing, but never anything.
Yeah.
It's funny. Like, it's not the first Star Trek movie I'd make you watch. But it is absolutely true to a Star Trek episode.
Yeah,
it is. It is.
Especially right, now that we've diverged from the topic again slightly.
It is more Star Trek than two out of the three Kelvin movies. I'm just going to put that there. It is more Star Trek than two out of the three. The first Kelvin timeline movie is actually quite good. The other two are progressively, and by the time we start playing Sabotage to blow up aliens, we know that we have completely lost our fucking minds and creativity. Sorry.
However, it was followed by what I would argue is the best Star Trek movie. So that's my opinion. Wrath of Khan.
Oh, I'm sorry. You went back to the regular time.
Yeah.
Yes. Wrath of Khan is the best Star Trek movie. That is correct.
Yeah. Hands down.
In every way possible, it is the best Star Trek. that will bring down some ire, but I don't care. I will stand by it. I fucking love
that. That is a hill I would die on as well.
Yes, that is a hill I will die on. Yes. And I don't need to die on it here. We can move over to the conversation.
Yeah. Let's do the conversation corner. There's
my All
button.
Right.
Button. Who's got the button? All right. Welcome once again, my friends, to the Conversation Corner. So, there was gaming this week. Yay.
We played session 39 of Forbidden Lands.
We did. I also got in my Band of Blades on Wednesday, DCC on Thursday, and Dresden Files on Friday.
Jesus, Bob.
Yeah. This was my busy week of gaming. Band of Blades, as always, is chugging along and doing all of the things that Blades in the Dark should do in this grim wartime setting. So loving all of that. DCC, did we wrap or do we have one more to go? I forget.
No, we got one more section to go. We got
one more, and then we're going to hang up DCC for a little bit and play some Sprawl. Dresden Files, this session felt like a Dresden Files type scenario from one of the books. We have three characters who are kind of in over their heads. My character is a werehawk. So that's my ability. I turn into a hawk. I have no real fighting skills. I have no magic. I have no weapons. I have my intellect, and I can turn into a freaking bird. That's my shtick. And yet the three of us managed to take on a superior foe, and we had a good plan and two foes. Yeah, honestly, the plan worked. We didn't have too many negative consequences and things like that. It was a good time. And the finale of that episode set us up for a really interesting start to the next episode, which I'm not going to talk any more about. But
so I have one question for you about your Hawkeye here.
Yeah.
In your human form, do you have feathers for hair?
No.
Or do you just have hair?
No, I'm not that kind of Hawkman. Okay. I'm not bad Buck Rogers Hawkman.
I mean, because that is a Hawkman.
Like, yes, that is a Hawkman.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's also not Avery Brooks, so he's not a man called Hawk.
Yes,
so, either one. So.
I'm a regular kid who can turn into a hawk. Yeah,
there you go.
Once again, as Phil said, Forbidden Lands on Sunday. Good times. We had a visit from our friend Dalb the Bard, who nobody trusted.
I like that you say our friend Dalb the Bard. Yeah. You guys hate this guy. Hate
this guy. He sucks. of course, closing in on the end of Deep Space Nine, last week after the watch party, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, I watched all the other episodes for the week and just finished them up. So I'm like, I'm ready to go. Oh, wait, it's not Tuesday.
It's just one episode. Like, it's an 8-week long episode leads up to the finale.
And I had forgotten there are some really good episodes in the watch it on your own part of the group with some good stuff going on. So that's for everybody who hasn't watched those episodes and you still have some left, you know, looking forward to you getting caught up for the watch party. Oh, you can have tonight's the watch party. Never mind. Anywhoozles. I will finish with, after I stopped or finished up watching the Avatar, The Last Airbender animated show, I jumped into the next logical choice, which is Legend of Korra, which I had never seen before. All I know is that it's a sequel to The Last Airbender. It's about the Avatar in a different form, and that's all I knew going in. It is not what I expected. I watched the first episode today. And I'm like, wow, this is like way more modern of a fantasy world. They have automobiles and way more airships all over the place and people wearing what looks like, you know, like modern suits and hats and stuff. And it's like, wow, this is like a totally different world of like, I don't know, it's like 50 some years later. And I'm like, whoa, okay, very interesting. But yeah, it looks good. I enjoyed the first episode. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with the rest of it. And that's going to be my short format show for watching during lunch and stuff for a while until I get through the three seasons of that, or four seasons of that, because they did four 13-ish episode seasons. All right. Very nice. Jerry, what about you?
Well, first of all, obviously played Band of Blades, which was good and harsh. We lost, despite our best efforts, we finally lost a couple of our army, which is inevitable. You're going to have to sacrifice, but you can't play the game without attrition in your army. It's a dark game and it's a lot of fun, but it played really well. And we had some hard choices to make and it went very well. Once again, DCC is cool. In that one, I am playing a wizard who's also a college professor, and I'm also in charge of the campus coven. So I've got a bunch of students that I'm training to be witches and sorcerers and so on, and trying to keep them on the side of good. So I don't treat them as an expendable resource, which actually became a controversy because one of the villains we were up against also had a coven, and she was treating her flunkies as an expendable resource. So it became a moral high ground won the day. And I'm not as familiar with Fate or the Dresden Files books. And so this was the first time I really got to flex my muscles in Fate. And I'm probably getting an idea of where I am power-wise in the game. It was really tough to play for the first couple of weeks because I didn't feel like – I really felt like my character – because of the way Fate dice work, and I don't understand I understand how they work. I haven't wrapped my brain around the probability numbers. And so anything with a difficulty of more than two always feels like impossible to me. Now I'm getting a feeling, no, there's ways to do that. And so I'm now getting to the point where I feel a little bit more confident. And Bob didn't say this, but Bob defeated the Ash Demon by just outsmarting the damn thing all the way through.
Yeah, like I said, my character is basically got his wits in a hawk form, and real short version of it is this Ash Demon chased me, and the surrounding area of the warehouse where we had the big fight, there were wards set up that were essentially stasis traps. If you stepped on this circle, then everything slowed down super slow and you could barely move. And I thought to myself, well, gee, maybe if I dive really fast at one of these things and then pull out, he'll come down and he'll hit it and get stuck. And and that's exactly what happened. I rolled well and doing.
It was beautiful. It was, as soon as he started doing it, the other two, myself and Dennis, were both looking at it going, oh, this is gonna be beautiful. Got to watch Trek. I couldn't binge watch it. Watching the episodes are good, they're dark. I watched two episodes and had to go watch something else for a day and come back to it. It's too depressing. And I like it though. I really like it a lot. Good feels about where our government's going, so it just gave me some good feels. I love the Godzilla versus Kong trailer. Looking forward to seeing some kaiju on kaiju action. As somebody who grew up in the 70s watching all the all those things on whatever, what was our local station? Whatever the local station was here, the
It was 29 before it was Fox. It was WUTV, I think.
WUTV, thank you. They used to always have creature features and monster movies on the weekends and all that kind of stuff. So we watched a lot of old Godzilla. So watching the new one come out looks really good. And while I know the company that makes it is kind of trash, they're making some apologies and fixes. But Cyberpunk 2077 has just been good. They dropped some, I spent a lot of time playing it this week, and they dropped some new updates. The guy who one of the creators came out, one of the owners came out and made some apologies for basically being a human trash fire and is trying to make up for it. But the game itself is fun, and the last couple of adventures have been very John Wick feeling. Lots of fighting the really bad guys. The villains in this game are definitely villains. It's very easy to play the good guy because the bad guys are really bad, and it's pretty easy to, despite it being a cyberpunk game, it's pretty easy to go, this is right, this is wrong. You know, this guy is making, there's some very trigger warning. This guy's making a child snuff film. We're gonna go find him and kill him. That's what our mission is, and rescue the kids. That's your mission. I'm like, yes, I know exactly where I gotta go, and I know who's gotta get a bullet in him. So it gives you some feels of doing the right thing and cleaning the world. And sometimes you need that. You need to feel like you're doing something good. So,
I'm all for busting up bad guys, but
yeah,
feel like we're trying to be sensational for the sake of sensational on that one.
Yes and no. I would a little bit.
It's fine. I'm not playing the game. No. I don't actually know what's actually going on.
But at the same time though, it's good that the villains are villains.
Sure. I mean, I like that too.
Yeah. And they're always the corporations and the gangs. So,
although I will say this, villains are villains is not always the most cyberpunky thing.
No, I said that's the one thing you don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
often gray villains are the most cyberpunky thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. DCC, we're going to wrap that game up soon. Honestly, and I got an article coming out later this week on Gnome Stew about this. I'm playing too many games that don't have a partial success with complication. So I got to jettison a game and play something with success with complication. I didn't realize how much I've missed this mechanic in games. And none of the games I have it right now. So I'm not touching my Forbidden Lands game, because now I'm just idly curious about how long this game can go. So at, you know, tipping 40 sessions, I'm just curious to see how much longer this game will go. And I think it will probably go for a while. Numenera, I'm a little reticent to mess with. I kind of like it, but also it lacks those kind of cool mechanics as well. So DCC was a good logical choice to put down. Plus, you guys have played the Sprawl before. So we're just going to jump back in and play with a couple new players in it as well. So I'm kind of psyched for that. Let's see what else. I've been watching a bunch of Enterprise. So I was going to skip Enterprise and go right to Discovery, but on the recommendation of Evil John, told me just to be patient and watch Enterprise, that it will help fill in a few things in some way for Discovery. And I was a little reticent about it. Like, I was like, man, I don't know. I never really liked this show to begin with, but like, I'm like 12 episodes in now, and this show is growing on me. Essentially, the whole show up to this point is the ship running around going, hi, do you want to be friends? No? Okay, don't shoot. Okay, you're shooting at me. Okay, I'm running away. But I'm digging it. The characters are good. I actually like the characters more than I thought I would. The technology, while it's annoying, is not bothering me anymore. The ship just got phasers. That was nice. That was a nice addition this week. It's growing on me. I think the hardest thing I have to deal with in Enterprise right now is that I both hate the theme song and love the theme song.
Yeah.
Like, the theme song should not be the theme song to Enterprise, but also the theme song should also exist.
Yes. Like,
it is, every time the option comes up to skip opening, I'm like, not this time. Like, I think I'll just listen to the song all the way through again.
Yeah.
Sometimes I hit it, but most times I just let it play. Like, I am literally having the hardest time resolving that over everything else in the show.
Yeah.
I'm digging it. Like, I just got the first, not the first, but we got, like, I cleared the episode where you get the really good glimpse at the temporal Cold War, where the guy who served the captain breakfast turns out not to be from this time period. Yeah. So
surprise.
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is good. Like I'm okay. This is all right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch it. It's four seasons. I'm just going to watch all of it before I go to, before I cut over to Disco and Lower Decks. I'm playing Minecraft, but my poor solo instance is getting so complicated that it's starting to get choppy. Like, it's starting to run out of resources because I'm in the beginning of end game stuff. And like, the shit is really complicated. Like, the number of calculations that are occurring per chunk now is getting kind of ridiculous. Like, it needs to be a server. Mm-hmm. So I've begun a thread of discussion about starting up a new Minecraft instance. And I think we're going to do something bold and depart from our 112 pack, which has many items in it that we love, and move to a 116 pack, which will be different. Because one, vanilla Minecraft will be different.
Yep.
116 includes all the new nether biomes that were included in vanilla.
Okay.
And then on top of that, we're going to go build a mod pack off of it. Some of the stuff we're going to get back. Mechanisms in there, thermals in there. I think refined storage. And if we want to just do refined storage the hard way, AE2. But two mod packs that we have grown up to love have not made it to 116. Tinkerer's Construct, which includes slime boots, the Ooh. Shuriken, the smeltery, that's not there. And then Ender.io, which is my personal favorite armor, the dark steel armor, that has not upgraded. So it will force us to have to do some new things in the game.
Yep.
I think I found a mod pack that will get us flight, that will give us angel rings. Because extra utilities isn't a 116, but somebody made a angel ring mod pack for 116 that basically says this gives you angel rings like extra utilities. So I think we'll want that in the pack. Anyway, we got work to do. It'll take a little while because this is going to be a whole new pack. We're going to have to actually look at our current pack, weed it out, and then see what is upgradable to 116. Because I have only one or two absolutes. Like, if there's no vein mining, I'm out. But I think there's a vein miner and stuff like that. Then we got to go find some other mod packs, throw those all in.
Yep.
And then do what we always do. We got to QA test it for a while.
Yeah.
With Schmidt, we got to get loaded on the server, QA test it for a bit before we open it up. It'll be a couple weeks, but at I think least. We'll get back to it. I'm currently reading the Gibson book, The Agency, which is the second in what's called the Jackpot Trilogy. It's really good. The first book in the Jackpot Trilogy, The Peripheral, was a little slow. But I have learned over years of reading Gibson that just to trust Gibson and let it go. Agency is a much faster book because it draws on everything that was established in the first book, even though it's kind of a different, slightly different setting. I don't want to get into too much about it, but it's able to kind of propel itself a little faster. It's actually and it's actually really good. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. I talked about playing Forbidden Lands, watched the Bills game, a bit of a heartbreaker, but You know, we lost to last year's Super Bowl champs, and man, did they look good.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they're just going to roll right over Tom Brady, like roll over him over and over. Because the one way that you defeat Tom Brady is you repeatedly put him on his ass on the turf, because he does not deal well with getting pushed around. And these guys look like they could do that. Like, these guys look like they can bust through a line and put a quarterback on his back. And so I'm definitely going to watch the Super Bowl. It's interesting enough to me. And now that I have no stake in it, I won't get an ulcer from it. So I can just, make some pigs in a blanket and some queso or something and chill out. Other than that, I don't know. It's like work shitty. So like, I didn't even realize, like, it doesn't even seem like the inauguration was last week. The inauguration feels like 100 years ago.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's just going to be work for a while. I don't foresee that getting better till spring, summer. Like, I'm just going to be in this grind for a while. Anyway, enough cheering myself up on that. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You want to roll out to the Patreon?
Yeah, we're a little short tonight, so we can get in, do a decent chunk of after show for the folks, and then give you time to take a breath before you have to set up the watch party for tonight. So that'll work out. All right, time for the Patreon shoutouts. As previously noted, thank you to the old school DM, Sean Merwin, our very own Mad Wizard, Troy Sandlin, Will Doyle, Zach Goins, Chris Constantine, Cindy Moore, Eric Simon, Mirko Frolik, and Andrew Demps. Thank you for being our patrons, and thanks to everyone for listening tonight.
If you are free on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. the Queen's time, come join us live on Twitch, where you can chat with other awesome listeners in the ever awesome Chat Room for Life. And seriously, Chat Room for Life, you guys brought it this week.
Oh yeah.
Made my evening to have you guys here, and I'm actually looking forward to taking you over to the after show to hang out for a bit and hang out with them, and then you can ask us questions as well.
And if you can't make the live show, check out our podcast each week wherever you get your podcasts. And take a listen to some of the other shows, the Mr. Retro Mark Network, such as Mastery Dungeons, Bone Sword Obsidian, the FM Gamers, Panda's Talking Games, the Gnomecast, John Goo Hustle, The Lounge, Bonus Experience, and back episodes of She's a Super Geek. You can and should also check out our sibling podcasts, Tabletop Bellhop, The Knights of the Night, and the always amazing Gaming and BS.
After you have analyzed the juggernaut and constructed your final attack on its weakness, stop and give us some feedback before you launch that final assault. You can reach us via email, mmp@misdirectedmark.com. Check us out on Twitter. The show and the network is @misdirectedmark. He's Robert M. Everson. He's GM Gerrymander. And I am DNA Phil.
If you like what we do here and on the other shows in the Misdirected Mark Network, you can support our Patreon campaigns. MMP, Mastering Dungeons, and Panda Stalking Games are at patreon.com/MMP. Zhenghu Hustle is at patreon.com/Zhenghu Hustle. And Bonus Experience is at patreon.com/Bonus Experience. Patrons of MMP, Mastering Dungeons, and Panda Stalking Games get access to the after show, pre-production show notes, musical parodies, the Bamboo Lounge, and other special releases.
This has been a Mr. Mark production, the media arm of Encoder Designs. Mic drop.
We out.